A very warm welcome to Consuming Issues. I'm Georgie Frost, here with you every weekday from 9 until 1 on Share Radio, on digital, online and through the Share Radio mobile app, making the pound in your pocket go a little bit further. The team from This Is Money, the award-winning finance section of the Mail Online, back in the studio for our weekly catch-up. Today I'm joined by Rachel Rickard-Strauss and Mark Chaplin. And coming up, after 6 years of record lows, interest rates may finally be about to go up.
The bank's Monetary Policy Committee's intention is to return inflation to target in a sustainable manner within the next 2 years.
But with a surprise rise in unemployment, lower inflation, global financial turmoil, plus household indebtedness, is the timing right? And what effect will it have on us and that pound in our pocket? Another side of the same economic coin, though, is the strength of the pound against the euro, up 13% this year. Good news for British holidaymakers in Europe. British exporters, though, well, they may be less thrilled by that news. And sticking with our continental neighbours, and compared to them, the AA says we're getting ripped off here at the petrol pumps. They want something to be done about it. Plus, the guarantor loans as damaging as payday loans. Citizens Advice certainly think they might be. Also today, we'll be discussing the rise of the discounters. Lidl reports a record £4 billion turnover as the big supermarkets come under fire. In a single day last year, the Competition and Markets Authority found almost 1,000 misleading pricing promotions in stores.
The crucial thing now is what's going to happen, what's going to be done about it, isn't it? We all know these pricing tactics are confusing, so we need to see them get on and enforce the law properly.
Also, mind the gap. David Cameron earlier this week announced he wants to tackle the gender pay gap within the next decade, but not everyone agrees there's a problem.
There's no real evidence that the gender pay gap is a problem that requires a government solution. The vast majority of the gap can be explained by individual choices about what careers to pursue and family choices about when to bring up children.
And we explore the secret cost of mobile phone emoticons.
To celebrate Share Radio's first year, we're giving away a Pure Evoke D2 digital radio every single week. Many lucky winners have already received theirs, and you could be next. To enter, visit shareradio.co.uk, register your details, and you'll be entered into the weekly draw. Open to UK residents over the age of 16. Visit our website for full terms and conditions. Share Radio, sharing ideas about money.
A very warm welcome to Consuming Issues here on Share Radio. I'm Georgie Frost, on digital, online and through the Share Radio mobile app. Now, journalists Rachel Rickard-Strauss, Mark Chaplin from This Is Money, the award-winning finance section of the Mail Online, join me in the studio for our weekly catch-up to run through the stories they've been working on this week. And coming up, good news if you're off on holiday to Europe, not so great for British exporters. The pound gets even stronger, but first, the age of super low interest rates looks likely to be over. The Governor of the Bank of England has hinted a rise at the turn of the year. During a speech at Lincoln Cathedral, Mark Carney says they're likely to go up slowly over the next 3 years, having been at a record 0.5% since 2009.
The bulk of the shortfall of inflation can be explained by the sharp fall in the prices of commodities and other imported goods since last year. This temporary period of below-target inflation has in fact provided a welcome boost to real incomes. The bank's Monetary Policy Committee's intention is to return inflation to target in a sustainable manner within the next 2 years. And that means setting bank rate to eliminate the remaining slack in the economy and to bring about the necessary increase in costs. Now, I expect that this will involve raising bank rate over the next 3 years from its current all-time low level of 0.5%. The need for bank rate to rise reflects the momentum in the UK economy and a gradual firming of underlying inflationary pressures, a firming that will become more apparent as the effects of past commodity price falls drop out of the annual inflation rate at the end of the year.
Well, that was Mark Carney there. He went on to say expected rates to rise over the next 3 years to about 2%. So this could be welcome news for savers, bad news for homeowners, and has come in for some criticism from some quarters as to whether this is the right thing to do at the right time. So, Rachel, Mark, explain to us, why then is this happening?
Well, the reason why it's happening is simply because the economy's improved. Wages are going up. Throughout the economy, companies are doing better. Therefore, Mark Carney now thinks it's the right time. Unfortunately, unemployment fell, but it didn't fall by much. So I don't think that's a major issue.
It had to happen sooner or later. Rates have been at 0.5% since March 2009. The Bank of England has been saying for quite some time rates will rise soon, and they sort of delayed and delayed and delayed, and I think no one really could have anticipated that it would be 6 years until they started to go up. But savers have had a really rough time for the past 6 years, and it's about time that things returned, I was going to say, to normal, but normal sort of a murky word in interest rates. Apparently normal is not the new normal. No, new normal is not the old normal.
Well, the old normal was about 4%, wasn't it? So
that's it. And we're sort of going to have to revise our expectations for rises. Certainly, rates will rise gradually, probably only by to 0.75% to start off with, and then we'll only get as high, the Bank of England says, as 2.5%.
Why so slowly?
Well, it's in order that people can prepare. I mean, if you have a mortgage, if you're running a business and you have high debt levels, you have to be prepared for this. It will hit you hard. But then people have to wean themselves off cheap money. It went on with quantitative easing in the stock markets. It's still going on now with interest rates. I mean, I think now's the right time. It should have been done before.
Also, the suggestion is, well, household indebtedness is significantly above where it was before, quote, the madness of boom borrowing years. So every rise hits households harder. And of course, households, businesses, perhaps a bit more risk adverse since the financial crash.
I find it just so frightening that we have report after report saying how levels of consumer debt are going up. There's a PwC report last month that said that in the next few months it could reach a record high of £10,000 per household, not including mortgages. And rates have been so low, the cost of money has been so cheap for so long that people spend and spend. The PwC report also suggested that people didn't realise quite what they were spending on debt, how the debt worked necessarily, and what the implications would be as rates started to rise. The danger is, one, that people won't be able to pay those debts as rates start to rise, but two, the Bank of England seems more concerned that as the cost of servicing your debt increases, so it gnaws into your disposable income, you have less money to spend on other things, and so that sort of pulls back on the economy.
But savers, though, would be cheered by this news, perhaps?
Yeah, if you are a saver, it rewards you massively, and that's the way it should be.
But will it? Are we likely to see these passed on? One, they're going to rise very slowly, and two, well, let's be honest, banks aren't that quick to pass on savings to us, are they?
Well, that is undeniably true, but if you have an ISA or you have your money in some sort of fund, eventually, over the course of the next couple of years, you are going to start to get a return on that money, which you're not at the moment.
So the big winners, the big losers, Rachel?
Well, if you've got a mortgage, better watch out. Just start to prepare. We've been told this for a long time, to check your spending, make sure that you have that kind of buffer so that as rates start to rise, you'll be able to deal with them, assuming that your wages don't go up at the same rate, in which case you'd probably be all right. And savers, I mean, they must be pretty relieved, older people particularly, who rely on their savings for an income. But if rates are only going up to this new normal of about 2.5% in the long term, and long term we're talking another couple of years until that happens, I mean, it's not really anything to get that excited about yet.
And he did heavily caveat this speech, though, didn't he? Should any further turmoil happen globally?
Yes, it's typical central banker speak.
And typical Mark Carney as well, yeah. One might suggest.
I mean, he's covering his back if anything does happen.
Well, these comments came only 24 hours after those of the Fed chair Janet Yellen indicated American rates could rise as early as September or October. But what about other global economies, the Eurozone, for example? Unlikely to see anything like this happen there.
I'd say we're a long way off that.
Well, this is the sort of interesting thing at the moment, is that central banks across the world are splitting apart from each other, and that's when you get financial chaos. So in the US and the UK, interest rates are going to rise. In the Eurozone, it's unlikely to happen, and they're all pulling apart and going in different directions.
Financial chaos? Goodness me, explain that a little bit more, would you, Mark?
It happens when central banks are not all going in the same direction. Then you see what we have at the moment, or this week, which is massive currency swing, stock market's still volatile. And it's just simply because the Eurozone economies are in a very, very different place to where the British and the American economies are.
So much of it is about sentiment. I mean, these speeches, Mark Carney, all of the members of the Monetary Policy Committee have been going around talking about rates rising. It's almost kind of a narrative to prepare us, just a sort of heads up, please could you start making sure that you will be able to pay if your mortgage goes up. I mean, he does the same thing again and again with inflation rates as well, telling people enjoy it while it lasts, this is a good boom, which I'm nervous about, because arguably that encourages people to take out more debt and spend more, and then they'll have to pay for it later. But by having these speeches, by sort of sending out these messages both to consumers and to the markets, he is sort of fulfilling the bank's own destiny, making things happen by telling people that they're going to.
He may have wanted to have done it earlier, but he couldn't have done it during the election or before the election.
Question is, do we wait for too long until people get so used to rates that actually you can't put them up anymore? And there's an argument to say maybe you sort of need a little bit of pain in order for people to wake up to it.
Well, look, let's talk about what you were talking about just then, Mark, and the government's comments expected to push up an already strong pound even higher, with some experts predicting it could climb as high as €1.50 to the pound. So good news for British holidaymakers. They will enjoy the cheapest summer breaks in Europe for years, up 13% this year, a whopping 24% in 2 years. But what about British exporters and perhaps small businesses? Mark, explain to us, why is the pound so strong at the moment?
Well, the pound is so strong because people want to invest in the British economy. So the British economy is being seen in the last year, 2 years, to have been doing very, very well. So outside investors want to buy the pound in order to invest in the economy, which pushes the pound up. We're seeing the reverse of the euro, because in the eurozone, the economies are not doing particularly well. People are taking their money out and putting it elsewhere, into the US or the UK, wherever
else. So this is where we're seeing the impact of what we've been watching for weeks, months in Greece, I suppose.
Yes. Everybody knows about Greece, but it has caused so much economic uncertainty, and it has caused so much uncertainty around the euro that people no longer want to hold euros. Great news for British holidaymakers. It's not great news if you're trying to export your goods because they obviously become more expensive. So in this country, we make a lot of high-end technological products, you know, a lot of things like chips, companies like Arm. So I don't think a company like Arm would ever be affected by this, but smaller manufacturers will undoubtedly be hit quite hard.
So this could actually impact quite badly on the British economy, couldn't it, Rachel?
I mean, at this rate, yeah, it could do. The increase has just been so dramatic over the past year. It sort of remains to be seen what will happen. And yeah, great though for a holiday.
Absolutely. And you've done a little bit of a survey here on This Is Money, where you can go to get the best exchange rates, what are the best cards to use. So let's go first where you can go to get the best exchange rates if you're going abroad. Presumably you can tell me where you don't go, and that is the airport.
Yeah, it's always a thing that you forget to do though, isn't it? I've done that before. I've, you know, bought my insurance at the airport and then got my euros afterwards. But if you can just remember, or if you can get a quote online, if you get a rate online, then you can pick it up at the airport for cheaper, or you can pick it up at a store ahead of time for less as well. It makes a huge difference.
There's lots of companies here that people probably wouldn't have heard of. Ace FX, Best Foreign Exchange, ICE, Money Corp.
There are websites, I think we do one as well, and this is money.co.uk, that will tell you the best rates at the moment. If you get it online, it's generally cheaper, and you can lock in that rate so that if you go and pick it up a couple of days later and the rate has fallen, or if the rate is more expensive in the store than it is online, you'll still benefit from the lower rate that you've locked in already.
So you find here on the High Street, Thomson and Halifax bureaus offering the best walk-in rates, currently 1.36 to 3.7, NatWest 1.35 euros. And then if you're an HSBC or M&S cardholder, you can get €1.40 for every pound. Tesco, Asda, Sainsbury's offer better rates, €1.39 to those who have ordered by phone or online beforehand. Also, best cards to use abroad. Can you get a special card, can't you, Rachel?
You can get prepaid currency cards that you can lock in rates ahead of time. It's particularly good if you have a sense of where the currency markets are going. If you think that rates are more beneficial to you than they might be in a few weeks, a few months' time when you plan to travel, then you can lock in that rate ahead of time. But also, it takes out all the faff of fees and nasty exchange rates. You get a better deal.
And also, just make sure you pay it when you get back, though, if you use a special card as well.
That's it. And there are other sort of funny things to look out for. Using them to pay for car rental can often be a bit of an issue, particularly at the moment where there's a bit of turmoil in places like Greece. Or just bring a bunch of different options. Bring a bit of cash, maybe top up on a prepaid currency card, and then have another backup card as well.
Coming up, British drivers getting ripped off at the petrol pumps, and are guarantor loans as damaging as payday loans?
Consuming Issues with Georgie Frost, making the pound in your pocket go that little bit further.
A very warm welcome. If you've just joined us, I'm Georgie Frost, here with you from 9 until 1 every weekday here on Share Radio. Journalists Rachel Rickard-Strauss and Mark Shablin from This Is Money, the award-winning finance section of the Mail Online, join me in the studio for our weekly catch-up. Coming up, the rise and rise of the discounters, as Little reports a record $4 billion turnover. Also, British drivers getting ripped off at the petrol pumps compared to their European neighbours. But before all that, I'm going to talk to debutante Mark Shablin from This Is Money. A very warm welcome to you, Mark. Where have you come from? What do you do at This Is Money?
Well, at This Is Money, I'm the markets reporter. So I cover stocks, commodities, bonds, all those sorts of things, really. I was originally, before that, at The Sun, working as a business journalist there. I've been at The Mail now for 8 months or so.
Excellent stuff. Yeah. Well, a very warm welcome to you. Lovely to have you here with us in the studio. Now let's talk about getting ripped off at the petrol pumps. According to the AA, we're getting ripped off compared to our European neighbours. In many countries, they say, the price of a litre of unleaded could be as low as a pound this summer, compares to the 117 pence a litre that people in the UK are paying on average. Now, Austria, the Czech Republic and Spain are among the cheapest countries to fill up. Well, earlier I spoke to the president of the AA, Edmund King.
Taxation is part of it, but also what we're concerned about at the AA is the lack of transparency. And at the moment, in the UK at the pumps, we reckon that diesel drivers are paying 4.5p a litre too much at the pumps. And the reason for that, we've studied the wholesale prices, and the wholesale prices actually show that diesel averages 2.5p a litre cheaper than petrol. So that's the wholesale price. Yet at the pumps, it costs 2p more. So in effect, there is a 4.5p rip-off there for diesel drivers in the UK. So they really are being taken for a ride there. And what we'd like to see the government do is have more fuel price transparency in Australia and the USA. They actually publish the wholesale price alongside the retail price, and then you can actually work out whether it is a fair price at the pumps.
Well, that was the AA President Edmund King speaking to me a little bit earlier. So, Rachel, I understand you've been speaking to expert Lee Boyce at This Is Money, your driving expert.
I have indeed.
And what has he been telling us about what's going on here?
Well, he too points out this incredible disparity between wholesale prices and the prices that we see at the pumps. I mean, it's just complete madness, isn't it, that what is cheaper on the wholesale markets is more expensive at the pumps. And he suggests that there are a few reasons for this. One, the price of unleaded is just a bit more competitive. People kind of have a number in their heads of what the price of unleaded is, that to sort of benchmark in a way that we don't perhaps in the same way with diesel. Also points to this kind of lack of transparency about pricing in the market. There's no real justification, and this is evident again today with this report from the AA that shows that it's not the same in Europe. And so if everywhere else does it, what seems like the correct way around, why is that not the case in the UK? Austria seems particularly one of the cheapest. Belgium as well, this report shows us. Slovakia as well. I mean, and also bear in mind if you're spending pounds, if you're going on holiday and you're spending euros, but you're earning in pounds, you're going to win that way anyway.
So the Czech Republic, 85 pence, Austria, 92 pence. You mentioned there about transparency. Edmund King's comments that the AA want to see a system similar to what they've got in Australia, where wholesale prices and those at the pumps are published. So we know exactly what they're paying. One step, but does it go far enough?
I think that would do it, if you just had the numbers, if it was that clear to people that there was that kind of disparity going on, then it's very hard to hide behind the murkiness of prices.
Well, let's move on to another story making the news today. So-called guarantor loans have the potential to be just as damaging for borrowers as payday loans. Now, that's according to Citizens Advice. It works on the basis that friends and relatives are asked to pay off the debt if the original borrower fails to do so. They're aimed at those with poor credit histories and carry interest rates of up to 46% a year. That's in one news report today, but we found even higher than this. The charity says that many such guarantors are unaware that they're signing up for such large debts. So, Rachel, I sort of touched on what they are, but go into a little bit more detail, if you would. How practically do they work? What are they? Is it a private agreement done through a loan company, a bank? What is it?
So these are loans that you take out where, if perhaps you don't have a credit rating that would allow you to take out the sort of debt that you wanted, you can call on a friend or a family member and ask them to guarantee your loan so that if you can't pay it for any reason, then they're on the line, they'll have to pay it for you. And with that kind of guarantee, lenders are more happy to give you money.
How many people does this affect? What sort of debts are we talking about here?
It's a much smaller market. I think it's 50,000 took one out in 2013. This is a much smaller market than the sort of conventional payday lending market has been. But what's really worrying about the Citizens Advice report today is that many people who have sought advice have not understood what the extent of their responsibilities are. That's really frightening. If you're taking out a debt on behalf of someone else and you don't quite realise what the implications of that are. And another thing that has concerned me for some time around these sorts of loans is that they're sort of marketed as the friendlier face of payday, you know, the more ethical ones.
Yeah, payday took quite a hit, didn't they, recently?
They did. And there was more than one guarantor loan company who was, I think, sort of pounced on that and said, well, aren't they all rotten? Let's get rid of them all. But look, there's this alternative. And this is one of the first signs that we've seen that actually people are struggling with guarantee loans as well.
Well, isn't there an issue, though, since the Financial Conduct Authority imposed these new rules on the payday loan sector, the number of people taking out them has fallen and therefore they're looking for somewhere else, perhaps?
That's it. Because there's so much more regulation around payday loans, the number of people who can take them out has declined, but also they're a lot less profitable for lenders, so many are sort of dropping out of the business or providing longer term loans that are more profitable. The whole market is changing. These loans have sort of slip the net somehow, and there's not the same kind of regulation around them because the guarantors are not seen as customers.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? Not regarded as proper customers, so they miss out on some of those protections,
exactly,
don't they?
And they lose out on that protection.
And one of those protections that we were talking about there, the interest rate caps we saw introduced, no such thing for guarantor loans covered by the caps. So what are they calling for to happen now?
We just need, I think, tighter regulation of these loans, more support for guarantors, and also, I mean, if people don't understand the implications when they acting as guarantors, then obviously there's a problem here. So Citizens Advice is talking about a liability warning on promotional material to make sure that people understand what they're getting into.
Coming up, the rise and rise of the discounters as Lidl reports a record $4 billion turnover. And what now for the big supermarkets as they come under fire for misleading deals?
Morning Money. The markets, the papers, and the city. Today's need to know on Share Radio.
Every morning from 6 to 9, tune in to Morning Money on Share Radio.
With Sandra Kilhoff and Mark Johnson.
An in-depth look at the UK and global markets and business.
Giving you all the day's need to know.
Morning Money.
Getting you ready for the day ahead.
A very warm welcome. I'm Georgie Frost. This is Share Radio Now. Big news for shoppers. As the supermarket's regulator says, it's found evidence consumers are being misled by confusing offers. A three-month investigation by the Competition and Markets Authority found some promotions could be against the law, but they insist that the practice isn't widespread. It comes after the consumer group Which forced the CMA to look at the sector, and Richard Lloyd from Which isn't surprised by the findings.
This just confirms what we've been saying. Our research has been finding for 7 years. But the crucial thing now is what's going to happen? What's going to be done about it, isn't it? We all know these pricing tactics are confusing. The CMA have said today In a single day last year, they found nearly 1,000 misleading pricing promotions. So we need to see them get on and enforce the law properly. Now, the recommendations, they're talking quite politely this morning, the CMA, but they carry a big stick. They can take these firms to court. They can be fined. They can be forced to change their practices.
Well, a full-scale review of supermarket pricing policy has been ruled out, and the CMA decided that the issues around some of those promotions aren't widespread. Nisha Arora is from the CMA.
There are indeed problems around some misleading offers, but we've also looked at the wider picture, and the wider picture is telling us that these practices around misleading offers are not widespread across the sector. And we've also found that traders, that businesses want to comply with the law. What we are also concerned about, though, is the complexity of unit pricing legislation. So unit pricing can be a really helpful tool for consumers. It can help them compare products so that when you and I go into a shop, we can decide what is the best deal for us. Now, what we've found is that the legislation and the guidance around unit pricing is really quite complex and quite confusing. That is a problem. We're saying we're not complacent, more needs to be done, the sector needs to be improved, but it's not widespread across the whole sector. We'll be gathering further evidence to see whether there are any breaches of consumer law. If we find breaches of consumer law, that could lead to enforcement action.
So what's next? Will misleading deals come to an end, or do we just have to be a little bit more savvy when we hit the shops? So Mark, tell us a bit more about the initial complaint, if you would, that the consumer watchdog Which put forward.
Well, the initial complaint was that the supermarkets were misleading their customers, that what you see on the shelves isn't quite the truth. So they're selling continuous deals. It is part of a wider problem in that supermarkets are involved in a very, very heavy price war at the moment. This is why you see so much discounting on the shelves, and it's where the industry is going.
But it's about misleading, isn't it? So examples, perhaps, of some of the tactics they've been using?
Well, it is misleading. It's quite complex in the sense that the offers on the shelves are not always clear as to what exactly it is they're selling.
So they're not actually saying they're lying. It's just perhaps unclear. Is that fair? Although they did say that they found some that broke the law.
There's two levels. There's one, a sort of general bamboozlement of, bog-offs and three-for-twos. But then there's something a little bit more serious that they pointed out, which was things like when prices go up for a couple of weeks and then prices are cut, and that's a special offer. But they're cut for 6 weeks, whereas they'd been at the original price for 2 weeks, and so really you're getting a good deal. Which has been saying for years that this happens particularly around seasonal products, you know.
I think we've spoken in the past about Christmas wrapping paper being on sale in August for the minimum amount of time that you have to have it on sale at a higher price, and then reducing the price. Well, who's going to buy it in August? Plenty of other issues as well. Pasta sauce aisle, for example, one sauce, £1 per 100 grams, another is 125 per 100 millilitres. And they say it's impossible to compare.
That's it. And that's when this unit price gets really important, because that's the sort of one common denominator that you can compare products fairly. You need a benchmark that everything can be compared against. And if they're not giving an accurate price per unit, then you're in trouble.
So the CMA in one day last year found around about 1,000 of these sort of dodgy promotion pricing. Are all supermarkets doing this, or is it just one or two bad apples, Mark?
No, it is all supermarkets at the moment. At the high end, you have supermarkets like Waitrose. At the bottom end, you have Lidl and Aldi. And then you have a huge number of supermarkets in the middle who have been incredibly squeezed on margin. Asda, Tesco are now going in for big discounts, big sales offers. And this is what you're seeing across the whole industry.
Is that what you think is the reason then? Because they've been squeezed, because we've seen the introduction, and we'll get on to the Lidls and the Aldis in a minute, but do you think that they're under the cosh because of the discounters coming in and they have to do something?
Yes, they have to do something. They're losing market share. They're losing market share month by month. Kantar Retail, all the research shows that. They have to do something. I'm not sure it then necessarily leads to misleading pricing.
I was going to say, I'm not sure many people will feel sorry for them.
No, but Tesco's is the largest retailer in the UK, and the last couple of years, their profits have been hit hard. Now, the reaction to that is to stock up and sell more products at cheaper prices.
But also, arguably, we've seen that this kind of discounting for years, I think, prior to the rise of Aldi and Lidl. I think it's just that people have got addicted to discounting. 40% of the groceries that we buy are bought on offer. And so that's really hard to wean us off. We've sort of grown accustomed to it. And actually, there's some kind of sense from the retailers that people are wising up to these different discounts and weird bamboozlement, and what they just want is cheap prices. And that's where the recent round of price cuts from all of the big supermarkets have been focused around basics and everyday cuts. And they're, you know, they're fighting on milk and bread, butter, things that people sort of have price points for in their heads. I think baked beans, that's, you know,
our staples, really.
Exactly, staples. And that's where the price cuts are. And there's a lot more of that now than there are these, you know, funky discounts that we've been having.
Mark?
The problem is you don't want to be a supermarket in the middle. You either want to be high-end and posh like Waitrose, or you want to be at the bottom like Aldi or Lidl. The problem with being in the middle is that you're not catering to anybody, so it's incredibly tough at the moment.
Are we likely to see anything happen as a result of this investigation?
I honestly don't know.
Given the environment you've just explained there, that's not going to change anytime soon.
No, you would hope that the investigation does get to the problem of this, but the overall environment is not going to change.
Because you spoke on This Is Money to the retail ombudsman Dean Dunham, who says the current rules were merely guidelines, leaving retailers with a lot of wriggle room. And of all the complaints, he says, that we receive across the entire retail industry, 1% relates specifically to supermarket special offers.
I think also people have just taken it for granted for a while that the pricing is a bit dodgy, and you just learn to take it all with a pinch of salt. But if one thing could come out of this investigation, I think it would be around this price per unit. If supermarkets take that seriously, and if they're forced to, because, I mean, there are criminal implications if they don't, if they take that seriously, but also if consumers learn about how to use those. And it's really boring going around the shelves kind of looking at the small print on all the tickets, but I've got to say I do it. because, you know, then you weigh up, do I really want 10 times more loo roll that I can't really fit into my cupboard? Well, if you know that the unit price, if you buy 50 versus if you buy 8, is... No, I would never buy 50.
I have images of you walking around with a notepad and a calculator, just double-checking everything. So if you have had enough, though, of the big supermarkets, you most certainly wouldn't be alone. Mark, you just mentioned it there. Lidl reporting a record turnover of £4 billion last year. That's up 21% in 1 year alone. Now, the discounter not only increased its sales in the UK, saving, well, perhaps more of our pounds if we go there, but also good for British businesses as well, boosting its exports of British goods across Europe, including £30 million worth of British cheese and £100 million of Scottish whiskey. Just explain to us, if you wouldn't mind, Mark, oh, the success and the rise of Lidl and what that means to, like you say, the ones in the middle.
Well, it's absolutely extraordinary. It's managed to recreate itself. Its advertising campaigns, it's now accessible to the middle class. Everybody shops there. It's taking more and more market share from Tesco, Sainsbury's, Asda, the traditional supermarkets that the normal shoppers used to go to. And Aldi and Lidl are causing a great many problems for those supermarkets. And I think it will continue as people continue to get squeezed and feel the pinch. And I think more this trend will continue for many years to come.
But they've managed to avoid getting embroiled in this sort of supermarket price war, the Competition Markets Authority that we were talking about there, because I suppose they keep prices low all the time. How are they able to do that?
Theirs is a completely different business model to the traditional supermarkets. So they sell a much smaller range of products. That allows them to use economies of scale to get very good deals on things. So whereas Tesco, you might have two aisles of different cereals. In Aldi, you have a choice of five. But then the infrastructure around selling five versus 200 is just so much more efficient, and they're so much more nimble. And they have public sentiment on their side, which, I mean, I don't... These things are sort of so transient. It's hard to say how long that will last for. But I think often our comments on Mail Online and This Is Money are a good kind of bellwether of how people are seeing different companies. And they love Aldi and Lidl still, partly because they're so cheap, but partly because you know, they're giving the boot to traditional retailers who they feel, as the CMA report told us quite rightly this week, that they've been ripped off and confused for too long.
I think they're very honest in their pricing. I think people know where they are with them in terms of pricing. It's like Poundland or the pound shop. You know you're going to buy things for a pound. It's as clear as that.
But the question I always think, and I ask this with challenger energy firms, with new businesses, anything like this, they've just bought Lidl, have just bought a 5-acre site in southwest London to employ 750 people. They've got a £4 billion record turnover last year, up 21%. Will they stay true to that core business model or try and push even further into the market and change what it is that made them so good? Because I imagine Tesco were once a small supermarket themselves.
It's true that one of the reasons why they're so effective is they're lean. Their operations are just very efficient. As soon as they start to change that business model, then they end up with the same problems that the larger supermarkets have. But I just don't see why they would do that. I mean, they cover still such a small proportion of the UK, so there's huge scope for expansion around the country without changing their business model, without increasing the number of products that they offer or encroaching into any other market. If they just continue to do what they're doing but service a wider number of regions around the UK, then they're winning.
Well, let's put supermarkets and discounters to bed for a little bit. And if you're missing out on the new £148 a week flat rate state pension, well, you can top up your current one by £25, up to £25 a week as of October. The only catch, you have to be age 64 or older if you're a man, 62 or older if you're a woman. So who's going to take this on?
So what this is about is a new pension, state pension is going to be introduced that will offer you £148 a week. Some people won't get that who just fall out of the, just a little bit too old to fit into that bracket. And so then what HMRC is saying is there's a new type of national insurance class that will enable you to boost your pension. So you pay in a lump sum and much like an annuity, then you would end up with a slightly increased payout every week or every month. For most people, it'd be quite a good deal, depending on how long you think you're going to live. If you think you're going to live for quite a while, it can end up being really good value for money. So experts have said, particularly women who live longer, it might be more attractive. Also, the other thing about it is this top-up. If you do die before your partner, you're able to pass on 50% of that. So if your partner is considerably younger than you are, that's probably worth a gamble as well.
So any catches then to this?
You can't do it yet. You can register your interest now, but you can't do it until October. And then you've got 18 months to do it. It's just about, there's no real catch. It's just about making that kind of weighing up. I don't understand really how anyone can do that, because surely we all think that
how long are you going to live?
We're
really
immortal. But if you feel comfortable putting a number on that and then working out in cash terms what the implications of that are.
Consuming Issues with Georgie Frost, making the pound in your pocket go that little bit further.
Coming up, why emojis, emoticons, whatever you want to call them, the cute smiley faces and logos in your text message, well, could be costing you a little fortune. But first, lots of reaction to David Cameron's announcement that he wants to tackle the gender pay gap within the next decade. Data released by the